This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. We all have secrets, stories so personal or embarrassing that we'd hate to share them even with our closest friends. But those are exactly the kinds of stories that comedian Kevin Allison is looking for. He has a live show and a podcast called Risk, and it invites people to tell their most private tales on stage. Here's a taste. This is L.A.-based comedian Jen Kirkman on the Risk podcast.
Everyone was paying their respects, but I have never seen a dead body, and I was scared to. So for me, it was kind of all about what I didn't want to do in that moment. And my cousins were like, go look at Nana. Go look at her. She's beautiful. And I said, well, I don't want to look at Nana. I don't want to see a dead body. It's not a dead body. It's Nana. I'm like, did she come back? Well, no, she's not alive, but it's Nana. She's gorgeous. Go look at her. She's gorgeous. And it's my whole family from Boston, and I'm the only one that moved to L.A., and I just felt like they were like, oh, all right, Hollywood, you don't want to be inconvenienced. Well, guess what we do here in Lowell, Massachusetts? We look at corpses and we compliment them, okay?
Risk is going to be at DSI Comedy Theater in Chapel Hill this Friday at 8:30, but first comedian and Risk founder Kevin Allison joins us. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you here. And Andrew Agapor is also with us today. He's performing at Risk in Chapel Hill, a PhD candidate in religious studies at UNC Chapel Hill, and a stand-up comedian, teacher, and improviser at DSI Comedy Theater. That's hysterical all by itself, Andrew. Welcome.
Good Thank
to
you.
Have you here. Kevin, tell us about the history of Risk.
Well, I had been in a sketch comedy group called The State. We had a show on MTV in the 90s. And when the group broke up, I didn't know what to do with myself. I started trying to do sketch comedy alone on stage, which didn't work out so well. And what I was doing, I was playing these characters trying to tell stories. But I realized I wasn't quite connecting with the audience as completely as I felt I could until another member of The State, Michael Ian Black, said to me, you know, I really think you should just drop the act and start speaking from the heart as yourself. Just let everything show. And I thought, oh, man, that sounds too risky. And he said, well, that's the word. If it feels risky, it's probably the sort of thing that an audience will lean forward and start opening up to.
But that's an interesting thing. Let me stop you there, because it's a very interesting thing. I mean, the idea that you can create a character, you're in theater, you get how to create a character and embody that character to kind of spread or share some of the life of that character with an audience. And yet there's a difference between, apparently, and I want you to talk more about it, the difference between that character and you and your real life and what you're telling the world about what you did.
Yeah, it's really interesting in that what's so wonderful about true storytelling is that the more you do it, the more conscious you become that there really are different sides to your personality that you choose to show depending on who you're speaking to and what context you're in. So when you put yourself in front of an audience in a show like Risk that encourages you to show us the parts of yourself that you're not used to showing in public, all of a sudden you realize, gosh, there's a lot to me, and oh my gosh, what do I really believe?
So you're revealing a character more than telling a story, in a sense, or revealing a character or an aspect of you.
Exactly. It really is a process of self-discovery, putting these stories together as well.
Andrew, you told a story at Risk last year. What made you do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I recently told a story at DSI, which I sent to Kevin when Risk was coming to town, a story that I at first used to explore some trials and tribulations as an adjunct community college instructor a few years back. And as I kept developing that story, Kevin's ideas about vulnerability and truth became increasingly more valuable to me. At first, my story was all about the zany characters that I encountered when I was a teacher. But then the more that I explored that story, the more it became about my own history, my own issues, the way that I'm somehow looking for validation from these students. And it became an opportunity for me to explore some kind of personal psychological issues, in particular, my own history with asthma.
Well, it's I want to talk more about that in a moment, but it's an interesting paradox. So you talked about these wild, zany characters. So they are filled. They bring comedy to your life. You don't have to do much about more about it than that. And yet it's comedy that you use that allowed you to get to these more gentle and tame aspects of your life that were actually the scarier parts, huh?
Exactly. I think that when we first do comedy, the thing that we don't want to do is to put ourselves on stage. Mm-hmm. That's something that we teach at DSI in our comedy classes, that we often hide behind the logical twists and funny examples that we put into our stand-up. But that as we get more comfortable, as we get more confident, we find that we actually are more successful at eliciting laughs and reactions from audiences when we expose just a little bit of ourselves.
What do you think is happening there, Kevin? Why is that true, if it is?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of stand-ups will come and do risk and become very uncomfortable because they're used to thinking, oh, I have to get 8 laughs per minute, and so I need to work in a sort of a mechanical way to make sure that that's happening. And I'm always saying, no, don't even worry about laughs. Worry about getting to the truth of things, and you'll be surprised at what people laugh at. Because when you are being really authentic, people often just, well, it might be laughs, it might be other kinds of reactions, it might be tears. Mm-hmm. Risk can go anywhere as far as emotional reactions from the audience and the storytellers. But really, it's surprising how funny stories can be when they're just improvised and what you're really focused on is just telling the truth.
Well, Andrew, give us an example of that, because you were about to say that you had explored your history with asthma in 2 different ways and kind of came to this revelation. Tell us more about that, and then maybe you can give us a taste of your story.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I agree with Kevin that when we start stand-up, we're looking for those laughs per minute. And something that I started working on when I was doing stand-up is I wanted to talk about my childhood. Eventually, I had built a set about my childhood with asthma. And now I use that to open the story of my being a struggling community college teacher. When I was a kid, I was born with chronic asthma, which meant that I was okay. I just couldn't do a lot of normal things like run or ride a bike or chew gum too fast without breaking out into wheezing. That also stunted my growth as a child, which meant I was always kind of the runt of the class. I looked like what would happen if Woody Allen got together and made a baby with another Woody Allen.
And so, God, I'm not going to sleep tonight. Go ahead.
So that meant that as a kid, I was kind of always trying to fit in. That's what we as asthmatics tend to do. But then all of a sudden, when I was 17, a senior in high school, a new drug was invented. And within 6 months, not only was my asthma cured, but I guess my prepubescent body decided, I've got oxygen. I'm going to grow now. I grew 10 inches. And then all of a sudden, I'm a 6-foot-tall, healthy person in college. When I met my wife later, I was on a date with her, and I explained all of this, and she said, you know what? That makes sense because you've got the body of a healthy man, but the personality of an asthmatic boy.
Wow.
And I opened with...
Is she still your girlfriend?
We are happily married.
Oh, well, okay then, I guess it...
But I love to open with that story because I think that it gives a little bit of insight into who I am when I'm at this college trying to get these students who I code as the popular kids to accept me as their teacher.
Can you give us a little taste of the story now?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the story is about my very first job. I just got a master's degree. I'd come back to the United States and I was eager to start teaching. There was a big contrast from getting a master's degree at Cambridge University in England to coming to South Carolina and wanting to teach at a community college. And the big wake-up call was that I was in this kind of nerd world where everyone loved to nerd out about philosophy and history, but my students did not think that my interests and examples were that funny. I would try to have lectures that grab students' attention by telling them stories about how if only I had known about utilitarianism, my pizza party would have gone a lot better. And they just were not buying it at all.
Andrew Agapur, who is going to be performing at Risk in Chapel Hill, and I'm also here with Risk founder Kevin Allison. So, Kevin, when you come, we get stories like that, then how do you develop them for Risk?
Well, I always – the podcast is very popular now. It's getting about 600,000 downloads per month. And so what I do is I always put a call out and say, hey, we're coming to town. We're coming to Chapel Hill. And so pitch us your stories. And so I'll get these emails from people who are fans of the show mostly, and they'll just kind of summarize a little bit of a story. And if it gets me curious, I'll start emailing them back and having them maybe make a recording of the story. I'll give them some notes. I'll hear it again, give them more notes. So it's kind of a back and forth for a little while. And I start playing therapist, basically. I start poking them, saying things like, no, is that how you really felt? Or is there any ulterior motive there? That sort of thing. And it's really fascinating to see how things occur to people that they haven't thought of in years, you know?
Comedy is the perfect medium for this in a lot of ways, isn't it, Kevin? And I'll ask you too, Andrew, because in a way, comedy plays in the cracks, right? Comedy plays with expectation. So here we are living in a real world where things happen, and then we as humans have this uncanny ability to project the future and have an expectation. The difference between the real world and our expectations is comedy, right? I mean, that's where – or at least the potential for comedy. So it seems like a kind of a ripe area to explore the disappointments and some of the joys of life. Kevin, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. Is so much of story, what we're fascinated by people's stories, is that gap between expectations and results. That, you know, you're going after something and then life throws a curveball at you and how do you react? And so because we feel so vulnerable in our own lives of, oh my gosh, how am I handling all these curveballs that life's throwing at me? We're very appreciative to hear it from other people. You know, I also coach even people in the corporate environment how to tell stories there. And I'm often telling them, you know, people don't want to hear someone like a Steve Jobs or someone like that talk about, oh, here are my successes and then more successes and then more successes. They want to hear, oh my gosh, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. I was at the end of my rope. You know, like to hear those more human moments from them when they were a little bit confused and floundering and then found a way.
And it's layered because not only it plays with your expectations. I mean, every time we see a massive success, we just assume it's always been that way. So the first expectation that's blown is that it was always that way for them. And then, of course, within their story, you hear the upsets and overturns that that brought them to where they are. So it's a very cool process. And Andrew, I would think for a religious studies student, even more, because God has to have a sense of humor or we wouldn't be here, right? I mean, there's that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, comedy, I think that one of the gifts of comedy is that it gives us a grammar for communication that lets us actually share very deep insights with each other. But in a way, as you say, it plays with structure, it plays with expectations, and it can lighten the load of a deep confession, of a stark proclamation. And so often, what we teach, for example, at DSI is that we can learn the tools of comedy not just so that we can be a hilarious stand-up comedian. Many people don't want to pursue that. It's not the most lucrative line of work. But it can make you a stronger communicator. And I think that's true across different modes of communication, and that's certainly true of religion.
And in a way, it can sort of unlock the binary. If you get stuck in a decision-making process where it's either this or that, there's this moment when humor sort of busts that open. It breaks your grip on the binary and allows the third way to crash in.
That's so true.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the reasons that Risk is such a great podcast is that people are going over their own histories doing just that type of work. As Kevin said, there's almost a therapeutic aspect to it.
And we're talking about humor here, but kind of in the largest sense, because, Kevin, it is not always so lighthearted and kind of yuck-a-minute stand-up. There are some very painful and difficult dramatic stories, including one in which a woman had to come to terms with a moment in her life when she actually tried to kill her mother, right?
Yes, that was a show that we did in Philadelphia about a year ago. And what was so beautiful about that story. It was a she had a nervous breakdown. She actually was also a religious studies student. She was trying to take opium and things like that to have a transcendental sort of experience, and it didn't go very well. But what was so ironic and painful about the story was that she really loved her mother, but started hearing the voice of God telling her to kill her mother. And she attempted it, and she relived it on stage in the most specific way. She was yelling what she yelled at her mother and yelling what her mother yelled back and talking about the look in her dog's eyes as it came between the two of them. And then the beautiful thing about it was that it was her mother who helped her get well again. It was her mother who came to the hospital and was with her for the next few years, just helping her get her head back together, get back on her feet, to the extent that she's now such a healthy, productive person that she's able to tell that story.
Right. Well, how did you work with her? Was she able to tell it immediately when she came to you? What was the process like for her in getting up on stage and actually telling it?
You know, it's interesting because she first pitched to me this story about some fun she had with some girls at summer camp when she was a kid. And I thought it was a terrific story. And then a couple days before the show, she called me and she said, you know, in the spirit of risk, there really is another story that I should attempt to tell. And when she told it to me, I was a little bit hesitant. I said, listen, I really need you to, you know, sleep on that. Think about whether or not you really do want to share that story. And I think you should speak to the members of your family about it as well, especially your mother, to get, you know, the go-ahead to do that. And so there was a back and forth for a couple of days where she was unsure if she was going to do it, trying to test out if her family was okay. And finally, she and her family decided, all right, let's do this. And it was just an extraordinary experience hearing it come together.
As a practical matter on stage, how do you transition out of comedy and then back into comedy after a powerful story like that, right?
Well, Janine Garofalo was the next person.
Well, there you go.
And she made the first, like, minute of her story just bashing me for having put her after that story.
Right. I mean, that's it. That's where comedy makes this transition. It shows you this wide gulf we're in. You're expecting comedy. You just heard that. How do I get through this? And, of course, we make everybody laugh. Well, Andrew, what about you? And how has the podcast influenced you in terms of your classes at DSI? But also, I mean, in your understanding of religion, of what it is we aspire to when we try to reach the transcendent. Is there something in common there?
That's a great question. You know, I think that something that is really powerful about the Risk podcast and about storytelling in general is that humans are able, in the passing on of information, by telling each other our stories, we're able to help cultivate wisdom from one another. Listening to the Risk podcast, I've experienced what people go through when a spouse is dying, when they have to face some demons from their past. And a well-told story can bring the listener to that space. I think that there's something about religion where the communication of these transformative ideas can be very powerful. It's somewhat fun and ironic that now it's at a storytelling stage where we see people engaging in this time-honored tradition of transforming others through the craft of storytelling.
You can hear how that is done and see it on stage in Chapel Hill, Friday, 8:30, Risk at DSI Comedy Theater. I want to thank my guests. Andrew Agapur will be there, and he is a PhD student at UNC Chapel Hill and a stand-up comedy teacher and improviser at DSI Comedy Theater. Andrew, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Kevin Allison, a comedian and creator of the podcast and live show Risk. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thanks so much, Frank.
Risk, DSI Comedy Theater, Chapel Hill on Friday. Just ahead, community newspapers. Should they be saved? Can they be saved? Find out why one UNC professor says yes to both. Stay tuned.